toyed with the idea of a Mufasa costume until he could be Simba. So he'd have to Pride Rock.
Yes, you should. You should have been Rafiki and just hold him up all night until your arms get tired. CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 206. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this week's episode, we are joined by Spencer Linton of BYU TV. He comes to talk about women's soccer and their recent bumps in the road and helps us preview the men's basketball season. Matt and I then talk about our takeaways from the Wagner scrimmage, and then we give our full preview of the men's basketball season. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com and follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout and listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, co-host of the ever-excellent BYU Sports Nation on BYU Radio and BYU TV, Spencer Linton. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, it's great to be back, Adam. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things we have been talking about this season so far has been the women's soccer team. So we'll start there, Spencer, with that team. As you look at their season so far, and obviously this last weekend, a little bit of a disappointment with San Francisco, but overall still a extremely excellent season. Not a lot of goals allowed. Some great defense. How good is this team, and does this last weekend with a loss and a tie change your opinion too much about where this team is headed?
I think that people look at this BYU team and they see a team that's been ranked in the top 10 for most of the season. It dropped to 13th. But remember, this soccer team's playing without its best player and had been doing so for now about half of the season. Ashley Hatch has been out with that hairline fracture in her leg, and they're expecting her to come back sometime early November. But BYU has been winning and doing so without her on the field. Throw into the mix that Paige Hunt was out and kind of recovering from a concussion and the symptoms that go along with that. BYU went on the road. They lost to a pretty good San Francisco team. They took a lead, gave up two goals in the second half, but you know, you wondered when the injuries and not having those star players was finally going to catch up with them, and it did against a team that's now in position to win the West Coast Conference title, and that's San Francisco. But, you know, BYU ranked 13th, still in a good position to go out and impress some voters. They still have a decent RPI. The goal right now is to try and get multiple home games. They're going to have to win out and win impressively to do that, and I think that they have an opportunity starting this week with home games against Pepperdine and against a decent LMU team. So hopefully Jen Rockwood gets back some of her firepower, including Ashley Hatch, in the next week or so, and they start to click and get going again, once again, like they have been most of the season.
Yeah, absolutely, and they those two games this weekend are on BYU TV, and of course, one of them on Saturday night on Halloween. So if you know you need something to do while you're watching, handing out some candy, turn on the Cougars. So let's switch to football real quick before I ask you a couple questions on the men's basketball. With that kind of revving up this week, anything that you think we learned in that Wagner game, which was not the most thrilling football contest I've ever watched. But do you think we learned anything about anybody, maybe Bo Hodge, maybe some of the backups? Or is this kind of one of those things where, yeah, it was great to get the reps, but not sure we learned much of anything?
I'm always interested to watch a football team in a situation like that because the team can slow down and kind of sleepwalk their way through a football game like that. But I didn't see that at all from BYU. And so the first thing that I think that we learn from this team is right now they are locked in. They're focused. Tanner Mangum came out. He played with precision, and he was throwing the ball all over the field like you wanted to see him do, like you would expect him to do against, let's face it, just a bad team. But you can sleepwalk through a game like that, and I didn't see any of that. So I think BYU was motivated and focused, and it doesn't matter who's who's playing and who they're playing against. That was refreshing to see that as well. In terms of like learning like major things or new plays, or it's tough because you're looking at the opponent ladder and saying, well, you know, Michael Shelton, BYU, ran a new punt returner out there and he averaged 18 yards per punt return. And, you know, we anticipate that he might be doing some of that work on special teams, but it's against Wagner. So you can't really determine just how effective he is until he goes out and plays against San Jose State. And I think we will see him against San Jose State. But along with Michael Shelton, in terms of new personnel, how about Remington Peck winning the new tight end, the open tight end position?
Yeah.
And being able to play both sides of the ball, I thought that was very interesting and an intriguing development, because BYU's banged up for sure. They lost Steven Richards for the year, and then to have Brian Sampson go down as well, why not throw Remington Peck in and let him play both ways? And he did a nice job opening up some things in the run game. So I thought those probably were the three most interesting headlines coming out of the Wagner game.
Yeah, of course, the biggest disappointment was that Dr. Anai did not engineer a play for Peck to get his first college touchdown catch in that game.
Yeah.
But you can't have everything, right? we got to see him come over onto the other side. So let's switch to men's basketball. Things are starting up, but of course, the unfortunate headline this week, Spencer, is that Mr. Everything, Kyle Collinsworth, is experiencing some patellar tendonitis, if I'm pronouncing that all right. And I think I am, because I've had it before myself. It can be very painful. It can be highly distracting to an athlete, and has in the past. Some athletes have run into other injury problems because of it. Is this something you think we should be overly concerned about, or is this just one of those things that happens in preseason and we expect him, once the games count, to be ready to go?
It's hard not to be concerned when your best player is out for any reason. But
yeah.
First and foremost, the tendonitis is not in his surgically repaired knee. It's in the other one. And so immediately, to try and gauge just what we were dealing with, I went and sought out his parents at the Boom Shakalaka, the BYU basketball showcase. And in talking with his parents, it's just mostly kind of a precautionary thing. He's a little bit sore, a little bit tender. But BYU just wants to play it extra safe, understandably, with a guy like Kyle Collinsworth, not press him, not push him to do anything. And why would they right now? He doesn't have anything to prove in the Cougar tip-off coming up tomorrow night or in the exhibition matches. So I don't know if we'll see Kyle Collinsworth until BYU plays an actual game that counts against the record, starting with Utah Valley on November 13th. But, you know, talking to his mom and dad, who are very involved in what he does and his future and his aspirations to play in the NBA, the impression I got was it's just a little bit of soreness and tenderness, and they're not going to risk anything at all. So he'll sit out for over the while and be ready to go once the season starts. But in terms of, you know, being worried about Kyle not being able to go for BYU right now, I think that this is not something you should lose sleep over.
Yeah, let's stick with Kyle for a moment. We've got the roster has significantly changed from last year. Obviously, some departures, Skylar Halford and all-time leading scorer Tyler Hawes. But one of the things that have been added is front court depth. Kyle has been kind of, you know, Mr. Triple-Double, has had, especially after Nate Austin got hurt last year, was clearly, if not before, the best rebounder on the team. I heard him in preseason say some things. He doesn't think his rebounding numbers are going to come down. Realistically, though, Spencer, is Mr. Triple-Double not going to be Mr. Triple-Double this year just because he won't be required necessarily to get down there and grab as many rebounds as he did last year?
Yeah, I think common logic, which you bring up, is having more rebounders and more balance on this team is going to limit some of what Kyle does for sure. But I think he is motivated and wants to own that triple-double record all by himself. And so he's going to get a few.
Yes.
At least one to to let him hold that NCAA record all by himself. That's going to happen. But when you have more size down low, and this, the entire complexity of the BYU roster is changed.
Yeah.
I mean, it was all outside scoring last year. Balance has been the key word that Dave Rose and Terry Nashif and Quincy Lewis, all the coaches are using right now to explain this team and what they're trying to accomplish is they want to play inside out. Last year, it was just outside. I mean, they had no zero to little inside presence scoring the basketball, and now it's all of a sudden with Jamal Aitz and Nate Austin and Kyle Davis, who transferred over from Utah State. You get some guys that are going to score in the post that have good, legitimate post moves. And Corbin Cafucci is a year better and a year more experienced, and he has more composure. And, you know, I think at some point he's going to get himself ready to play in the NBA. So that with that many big bodies and BYU playing inside out, yeah, it's going to slow down Kyle a little bit. He'll get that triple-double record. I don't think that it matters to Kyle. As you know, the big goal this year is for BYU to win its first ever West Coast Conference title. They don't have any of those in the regular season or postseason. And I think that is right there. Number one, BYU to establish itself as a power in the West Coast Conference. It's going to be tough against another really good, really solid West Coast Conference perennial powerhouse team in Gonzaga. But I think it's more about what the team needs to accomplish and what they want to accomplish than it is for Kyle to go out and get more of those individual accolades.
Yeah, one of the things you bring up is as you talked about the depth and having some offensive options in the post. I don't think we've seen a double team of a post player in a couple of years. With the shooters we have, I mean, even if it becomes a more balanced team, can't you see Chase Fisher just feeding a guy into the post and then daring his guy to slough off to get that to do the double team? It's not going to be like watching the Cougars have been, especially not like last year.
Absolutely. That's a great point you make. BYU had one of the most productive three-point shooting seasons in school history, and that was without much of a post presence last year. And so for the Cougars to be able to trot those guys in the post that they didn't have last year out there, it's going to open up things more for the dead-eye shooters like Chase Fisher and Nick Emery. And BYU, while they lost Tyler Hawes, their all-time leading scorer, as you brought up, isn't it funny to think that, man, you lose the guy that scored more than any other player in school history, and this team might be better?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't add up, but I really think that's what BYU is trending toward with the addition of some post-presence scoring the basketball.
So as you look forward to this season, obviously the out-of-conference schedule is maybe not as strong as it's been the last couple of years. There's still some good games in there, Utah, Harvard, in Hawaii, as well as whoever else we may pick up there. Is this the kind of year you mentioned? There is the possibility they could be better. Things will have to come together, but it's certainly achievable if people are healthy. Is this something where, because of the conference out of conference schedule that's really helped them the last couple of years get into the tournament, is this a year where without that it's kind of WCC conference or bust?
I think it's, when you talk about the schedule, it's tough enough, but BYU would really benefit if they could get to that championship match in Hawaii over that holiday tournament, because most likely they'll be playing against the Oklahoma team that in all the preseason polls is at least a top 15 team. So BYU really would benefit by winning that first game against Harvard and then ride that wave, that RPI momentum that they would gain by remaining in the winner's bracket in that Hawaii tournament. Central Michigan's a good game.
Yeah.
Utah's a good game. And so there's enough there. And if BYU plays Gonzaga, what I think will be three times, twice in the regular season, and then most likely facing them again in the West Coast Conference tournament, that'll provide a much needed RPI boost. So I think Dave Rose has put together enough with the schedule. It's not going to be as good as years past, but if they can get to that championship game in Hawaii, stay in the winner's bracket there, I think it'll be every bit as good as what they've had in the recent years. So I think that is a huge key for BYU to beat Harvard in that opening game and play against teams that are going to provide a good RPI challenge and the boost that the Cougars will need when they're trying to put together an at-large resume. Obviously, you want to win the West Coast Conference and just kind of book your place and make it so that the committee doesn't have to put an at-large spot in there for you. But, you know, Dave Rose is a mastermind of this, and he averages 25 wins a season as a coach. I think this is the year BYU wins 27 or 28 games, and they have enough of an RPI, and hopefully they can finally get into that single-digit seed category in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that would be, as you said, pretty remarkable to lose your all-time best score and then potentially be a better team. So we'll get you out on one last question, Spencer. Halloween, are you dressing up?
Oh, man. You would ask me. I'm actually headed to a party tonight with my four-year-old. He is a lion, and I had toyed with the idea of a Mufasa costume and thought he could be Simba. He'll get out the Pride Rock moment.
Yes, you should have been Rafiki and just hold him up all night until your arms get tired.
Oh, I may be doing Rafiki a disservice if I dressed up as him. But no specific costume right now. Have been toying with the idea of maybe dressing up as my childhood hero, baseball star Cal Ripken Jr., some eye black on underneath, things like that. But I don't know. Maybe I can find a last-minute Rafiki costume or a Mufasa costume. We'll go with that.
Well, you can always do what my brother Matt does, just dress normal and be a serial killer because they look like just the rest of us. So there's your other easy go-to trunk-or-treat option. So, well, Spencer,
Matt is he's an elite costumer for sure.
Yes, yes, for sure. He's used that one for quite a few years, and it actually, he says after he says it, people are a little creeped out the rest of the evening. So, well, Spencer, thanks for coming on. Enjoy your evening, and we will talk to you again soon.
You got it. Great to be on with you guys.
CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, we missed something last week.
Uh-oh.
Something big. A week ago today, we're recording this on Wednesday, October 28th. A week ago today was the day that Marty McFly goes into the future to try to save his children from basic humiliation and imprisonment. And we missed it, Matt. We didn't even talk last week about Back to the Future at all.
I don't know what's wrong with us.
So I have a question for you in honor of Back to the Future a week later. Of all of the technologies in Back to the Future that have not happened but were in the movie, what would you pick as the technology you wish we had?
Flying cars.
Hoverboards, not hoverboards. What do you care about a hoverboard?
The hoverboard to me looks like an injury waiting to happen.
Yes.
And maybe it's just because I'm a dad, but I look at the hoverboard and I'm like, that just screams broken tailbone to me.
You might be too young, but when the movie came out, there were kids at school adamant that the hoverboard existed, but moms had stopped it from coming out.
Oh, I remember this.
Oh, yeah, that is quite awesome. Yes, moms. You know, they weren't able to stop, lawn darts. They weren't ever able to stop trampolines. But gosh darn it, they put their foot down and stopped the hoverboard.
The slap bracelets.
They weren't able to, a lot of things moms would have rather gotten rid of, right? I mean, let's be honest. So anyway...
Rollerblades?
Yeah, rollerblades are great.
Rollerblades are ridiculously dangerous.
Yeah, why? What are you talking about? The technology I wish they had, I would say the flying cars, but I just don't see how that works without people just like massive crashes all over the place, right?
It'd have to be
self-driving.
Computer. Yeah, it'd have to self-drive.
Man, I want a self-driving car.
That would be pretty awesome.
Can you imagine taking a nap on your commute to work in your self-driving car?
Yes, I can.
I bet you can. I think that'd be great. And whenever I hear people say, like, well, won't the computers mess up? Have you watched People Drive?
These people not watch the Jetsons? The computers are going to be just fine.
The computers are going to be just fine. I mean, I have seen, this was not where I live now in Minnesota. In Indiana, I was commuting between West Lafayette and Indianapolis on for an internship. And I commuted with two other interns who had internships in Indianapolis. And one day we pull up next to this woman who's driving 75 miles an hour reading a novel.
Oh, my gosh.
Like a paperback book at 75 miles an hour. Like, me and these two other guys were kept looking over there like, no, we don't see what we're seeing. Look back. Nope. Nope, we see what we're seeing. She needs a self-driving car.
Yes.
That would actually be safer for all of us.
The first thing she needs is to not be driving anymore.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Take that stuff off the road.
Yeah, just stop. Just stop. So, Matt, Halloween coming up. Are you dressing up or being a pansy as usual?
Pansy as usual.
I already stole your joke and used it with Spencer, so you can't even use your joke, which you use every year when we do this.
What
are you going to for Halloeen? What is
the serial killer joke?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I already used it. Sorry, dude. I was trying to give Spencer some ideas. He was heading out the door to a trunk or treat. So, do you know the trunk or treat? I think that's a church program, isn't it now? Church one.
I think it's in the handbook.
Handbook two.
Do you know what my favorite Halloween costume I ever did was?
No, I don't.
One year in Virginia, I think it was at the end of Strasburg's rookie season when we were living in Virginia. I put on my Steven Strasburg jersey and my Nationals cap, and I put my arm in a sling. And I showed up to a Halloween party from a friend of ours in the ward. And they're like, well, what is this? What are you? I said, I'm my worst nightmare. I'm an injured Steven Strasburg.
And that happened shortly thereafter, didn't it?
Yeah, I think I kind of feel responsible for it. I feel like I might have jinxed him.
Nice job. Nice job, dude.
But it was that was creative.
Yes, that was creative.
That's
that
a good idea.
That was good. That was pretty good. So, Matt, let's move on from Halloween and Back to the Future and go to the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Women's soccer, Matt, did not have a good weekend. They had a loss to San Francisco and then a tie to Santa Clara, a scoreless tie, both on the road. You know, both okay, decent teams, so it's not like it's a terrible loss, but obviously dropped in the rankings down to number 13. As we had Spencer on the show, he talked a little about it. They got a big weekend ahead of them. They gotta win these next few games to kind of bolster their case for tournament play. So we shall see. They got Pepperdine, Loyola Marymount, and St. Mary's remaining on the schedule. Women's volleyball, also not the greatest of weekends. They lost to Loyola Marymount in five sets. They have, with their rival, also ranked number 24 San Diego at Smith Fieldhouse Friday night on BYU TV. So good luck to both the women's soccer and women's volleyball teams this weekend. They'll need to get some victories. Let's move on to Cougars in the Pros.
You still don't have the sound effect, do you?
No, right here. Just wait for it. With the first pick in the NFL draft.
Boo.
The New York Jets select.
Boo. Sit down, Goodell.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
That's pretty high production quality right there.
Yeah, we spared no expense.
Really
we
rolling out.
Spared no expense. Tyler Hawes, Matt, in his third game, scored more points. That's right. So let's see. Man, Jay Money, I got to talk to him. He needs to put the lead in the front. The lead in the front. How many points in his stories? You can go and check Jay Owens doing a great job at jmoneysports.com chronicling Tyler Hawes. He also has Matt Carlino, lots of other pro players that he follows, the little harder to find their statistics, as it were. Anyway, Tyler Hawes, in 18 minutes, was 2 for 4 from the floor and a couple of free throws that he hit. He's averaging 9 points, 60% shooting, and 50% from three-point land.
There you go.
That's our Cougars in the Pros edition for this week. Matt, let's talk about Wagner. Wow?
Yeah. What was that?
Basically, I felt like, you know, when you'd play Madden against somebody that just had no idea what they were doing? Like, they just couldn't even stop you at all. They would, like, definitely pick the right defender to just let you go right past them, you know? Have their safety all of a sudden rushing towards the quarterback inexplicably. That's what I felt like with Wagner. There's just, it was like these guys were playing a video game and the other guys weren't.
Yeah.
Did we learn anything? Can you learn anything from a game where the talent level is clearly so disparate?
I'll tell you, there were a couple takeaways from this game for me.
Okay.
One is, I'll tell you what, maybe not this year, but Bo looks pretty good. I think Bo's going to be a gamer. The question is really going to be, you know, what happens next year and the year after that, you know, and what do his opportunities look like? Slash, does he stay in Provo? But I think that down the road that kid shows some real promise. I am excited about his future. I guess that's really the only takeaway I got out of that game.
So, you know, he probably should just transfer, because ask Ammon Olsen. It's not like a chance for starting would have come. Totally awkward. Would. It totally would. When guys transfer, I mean, quarterbacks in college get injured all the time. Or somebody that's supposed to be good absolutely stinks, right? I mean,
right.
So when I see these guys transfer to, like, you know, if you get a chance to transfer to another D1 program, well, great. Jay Keep's got a chance to go to Kansas and then to Miami, right? I mean, downgrade to Kansas. Miami, at least historically, is a good program. Those are good opportunities. But if you're going to go to, like, you know, FCS or, like, D2 or whatever, just wait, right? I mean, one of those guys that transferred could have been the starter this year instead of Tanner, right? Could have been a senior stepping in, just like Christian Stewart did last year. Or last year could have been there instead of Christian Stewart. So I'm with you. I liked what I saw from Bo Hodges. I don't know if he's, you know, any good or not based on the who they were playing, but I mean, he looked good, right? I mean, he looked good, and I'll tell you what, the only thing that could stop Algie Brown in that game was a cannon. Literally.
Oh, yeah. That's the second takeaway. Can we back that thing up just a little bit?
Nobody's hit it ever. This was the first time.
He could have broken his leg.
So what? He could have broken his leg running into a cheerleader. We don't take them off the field.
Well, then maybe we should, if they're that dangerous.
The best suggestion I heard was
on
BYU. He's not going
to break his leg running into a cheerleader. That's way less likely.
What are you talking about? Do you remember the Miami crane for the Miami Hurricanes? Remember when he got absolutely, like, his leg broken in, like, four places?
Yeah, well, okay, whatever.
I'm just saying, it could happen. It could happen. But I heard what they should have done is put some, like, sandbags, you know, like the military will do for floods. Put some sandbags there in front of it, you know, filled with feathers or something. I'm just saying, don't move. You don't need to move the cannon, all right? Just don't let him hit it. Or one of those ROTC guys could dive in front of it and protect him and sacrifice themselves. It's another possibility. I'm just saying.
That would have been the smart thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, what are they there for? So, Matt, we did get a football-related tweet bag question that we're going to discuss before get on to basketball preview. This is from Andre Hutchins, that's at AC_Hutchins. Is it weird that I don't have to look up his Twitter handle?
No, that's just it's, AC, that's great.
AC underscore Hutchins. Taysom scenarios, okay? So he asks us, first, does he stay? Yes. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think Taysom stays.
Why does he stay?
Because he only got BYU. One shot at this.
He loves BYU. I think the one place that, because they will need a quarterback, an experienced quarterback again, Michigan and Jim Harbaugh, maybe. Maybe. If he stays, who is the QB? You and I have discussed this on a previous podcast. We disagree. Matt, who do you think is the QB if Taysom Hill is healthy and stays at fall camp next year?
And BYU runs the table?
I'm not saying any of that. Who do you think the QB is going to be if Taysom and Tanner are both healthy?
I'll stick with my previous assumption is that Tanner is still the quarterback.
I think it's no. You said Taysom.
Did I say Taysom?
Last of time. Yes, you waffler. I know it's the Republican debate tonight.
You're a waffle iron. All right, good. Taysom's the quarterback. Taysom's good, because that's actually what I wanted to say.
I think it's Tanner.
Nuts.
He's not going to retire. Andre asked that.
What do you do with Taysom? What do you do with him?
You make him a running back. Just imagine for a moment, okay? You trot out this package, all right? It is a wishbone package with Bo Hodge under center, Taysom Hill, and Jamal Williams on the wings, and the fullback is Squally Canada. Defend that, America.
Where'd Tanner go?
It's just a package you bring in. You run five, six, seven, or eight plays a game with that package. Or Taysom under center and Bo on one of the edges, or Squally and Jamal and Taysom under center, and then you pick big fullback guy. I'm just saying, like, defend that. I mean, if Taysom stays, and if he was the starting quarterback, we could have the best running attack in the nation. I'm just saying, we could. I think you could convert him to running back. Do you think he does that? I don't know. He seems to really like playing quarterback.
I don't think he comes back to play running back.
What about tight end? Can you imagine? Isn't he Gronk? Isn't he like a shorter Gronk?
Wait a minute. That comparison just seems crazy to me.
He's as athletic as Gronk, and he's got
I don't think he's
size.
As big as Gronk, and no, he's not nearly as crazy as Gronk. He's not as Gronk as Gronk is.
Well, but Gronk's not crazy on the field. Gronk is just tough on the field, right?
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine Taysom playing tight end? He bulks up a little bit. Like, who's going to cover him? Defensive backs couldn't cover him. I don't know. There are possibilities with his athleticism if he stays and is okay with not playing quarterback. But I think you're right. He's going to want to play quarterback.
I think that if they tell him, we'd love to have you come back, but you're not going to be quarterback, I think he looks at a different opportunity. I think you lose him.
I think you know how loyal Bronco is. Don't you think there's a very good possibility? He says, if you come back, you're the QB.
Maybe, but I also think I also think Bronco never. He doesn't make those kind of promises.
Yeah, that may be true. I don't know. He loves Taysom.
He does. He does love him.
I think he loves Taysom even more than he loved Riley Nelson.
I don't know. He really liked Riley Nelson.
Yeah, but Taysom has all the grit Riley had, plus a lot more talent.
Okay, I'll give you that. But it's the grit that Bronco loves.
Yes, but Taysom's got grit coming out of his eardrums. You know.
Well, you got to love what he did, right? I mean, he goes back into that Nebraska game, knowing that he's got that jacked up foot. I mean, that's what made Bronco fall in love with Riley.
That's right.
Was Riley's willingness to go back in there and play for the team?
Yeah, despite the fact that his back is basically doesn't work at all. So Matt, let's go on to our 2015-2016 men's basketball. Preview.
Extravaganza!
All right, so Matt, the first news to come out of camp is not good news. Kyle Collinsworth is dealing with some patellar tendonitis in his not surgically repaired knee. All right, I have had patellar tendonitis. It can hurt like the Dickens. I don't know what that actually means, but it's bad. So Matt, on a scale of 1 to 10, or heck, we could do our 0 to Detmer, but it seems bad to put worry towards Detmer. Never mind. 1 to 10. We'll do 1 to 10. How worried are you?
0.
0? You're 0 worried?
I'm not worried about this at all.
The guy's not even playing yet.
It's going to be fine.
Okay. All right. Good. I'm like 2 worried. Not high.
Listen.
Amount of worry.
If it really is just the patellar tendonitis, if that's really all we're talking about here, he's going to be fine. You just let that rest. We've got time between now and when games that matter start. You give him the rest. You let it heal up nice, and then he'll be fine.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a tweet bag question regarding Kyle Collinsworth. Brian Taylor, that's at Boozer Taylor on Twitter, a virgin tweet bagger, I believe. You don't like it when I use that phrase.
I think it's a little awkward.
You think it's a little awkward. All right. Sorry, Brian.
Which part of the phrase are you referring to? The tweet bagger phrase or the virgin tweet bagger?
The virgin tweet bagger.
You yeah, like the whole tweet thing. Bagger. The whole construct there is just weird.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Tweet bagger?
Tweet bagger. All right. That anyway.
Carpet bagger?
That's right. That tweet bagger. If Collinsworth is not ready to go by the beginning of the regular season or gets injured this year, can BYU make the NCAA tournament? My answer
yes.
is no. We will not make
yes,
the tournament.
Yes, they can.
Really? Yeah, I would say so. Collinsworth is really good.
He is.
I don't think we make the tournament without him.
I don't think we get out of the first round without him.
You think we make it, but it's a low seed, and then we get bounced in the first round.
I think yep. without Kyle Collinsworth, I think this team could get a play one of those play in games. But that's part of the bracket.
That is part of the bracket.
But we all fill out in March just for fun, just for bragging rights. No wagering,
that's right.
Please.
No wagering. No gambling.
But
oh gosh, I'm so sick of these stupid FanDuel and all these commercials.
I'm so done with that stuff.
Stop. You're killing me.
Oh, it's absurd. And then they're even doing segments on ESPN now where they're like talking about the FanDuel points that these players earned. I'm like, I want this to go away. ESPN is really tied up with these guys. They have given ESPN a ton of money.
And ESPN's working hard on it. Sorry, I interrupted you talking about the play-in game. But basically, anyway, you think they'll make it. I do not. His other question is, who backs him up at the point guard spot, Matt? And quite frankly, there's no backup point guard returning on the roster, per se. There are a bunch of guys on there that maybe could be. My answer is, I don't know. Matt, do you have a better answer than I do?
I feel like I should, because I'm saying that they would be okay, but I'm not sure.
So, I mean, Nick Emery is more of a scoring guard, right?
Right.
At least he was in high school. That was a few years ago. Could he be a point guard at this level? I mean, you watch the high school film. He can handle the ball. I mean, in theory, yes. What I really hope is that he is that he becomes a defender, right? Jackson, his brother, was one of the best defensive guards BYU's ever had. Maybe the best, actually. And I'd love to see him be a defender. But could he be a point guard? Maybe. Jake Toulson or Jordan Chapman, they're kind of the bigger type of point guard like Collinsworth. Maybe it would be less jarring to bring in one of those kind of guys. I don't know, man. I really don't know.
Maybe it's Chapman.
Could be Chapman. Could be Chapman. It could be. I mean, Toulson did play some point guard last year, but not effectively. Now, granted, he was a freshman, so you think there's some growing pains there. But I know who won't. Corbin Kafusi will not be the point guard.
Nope, definitely not.
Or not Alan Hampson.
Not Nate Austin.
Not Nate. I don't know. He's pretty versatile. He can bring the ball up. No, not Nate Austin either. So Matt, let's jump into some of this previewing stuff. We're going to do that by doing some over-unders, okay?
Oh, here we go.
That will tell us, I think, a lot of what we think. I don't even know what I just said. So
nope, did not. That didn't even make sense.
That didn't make any sense whatsoever. So Kyle Collinsworth last year averaged 13.8 points, 8.7 rebounds, and 6 assists a game, okay? And obviously had a bunch of triple doubles. Over under 14 points a game for Kyle Collinsworth.
Over.
I will take the over. Over under 8.5 rebounds a game for Kyle Collinsworth.
Over.
I'm taking the under. Over under, he had 6 last year, 6.1 assists per game for Kyle Collinsworth.
Under.
Over. Wow, we are a little off. We both think he's going to score more. I think he will rebound less. You think he will rebound at least the same. And assists, I think he will get more. You will think he will get less. I'll tell you my reasoning, then we'll get yours. My reasoning is I just don't think he'll have as many rebound opportunities because there's actually going to be other people on the floor that can rebound. So he won't have to carry as much of the load. I think he's going to do a lot of driving and then dishing. When a big man comes to help, he's going to be laying up little alley-oops and little bounce passes to guys like Ates and Davis for big slams and easy layups. That's why I think there's more assists. Matt?
I agree with your last point, and I think the later we get into the season, the more that's going to be true. But I think for the early part of the season, I think it's going to take a little while for some of that to develop.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
And so I do agree with you on all of those points that the rebound opportunities are going to be less. There's going to be more guys out on the court who can get those. There he is going to be doing a lot of dealing off of the drive. I absolutely see that, but I don't think it's going to happen right away.
That's fair. That's fair. You're wrong, of course, as usual, but it's certainly.
I guess time will tell, my friend.
Time will tell. So, Matt, my next over-under, last year, Chase Fisher averaged 13.2 points per game. Over-under 15 points a game for Chase Fisher.
Over. It's the Fisher-Collinsworth show.
I agree with you. I think it's not going to be a lot over. Matt, who leads this team in scoring this year? I think we both think it's either Collinsworth or Fisher. If you had to gun to your head, pick one today. Who leads the Cougars in scoring this season?
Why are we bringing guns into this? What's going on? I'll just answer the question. Easy,
no,
everybody. Easy.
No,
everybody just relax.
Gotta put a little
everybody
pressure on.
Just relax.
All right. We'll relax.
Chase Fisher.
I am also going to go with Chase Fisher. I think they're going to be close, though. I think it's one of those things where in the middle of the season, you may be thinking, you don't know. I think what will happen, though, is I think some of Collinsworth's points, to your point, a few moments ago, we'll go to the big guys later on in the season as they get more and more acclimated to you know, playing with each other and all those type of things. But all right, so that's an over under right there. Eights, Matt. Okay, last year everybody was excited about him. Last year everybody thought he would be a huge addition to the team. Unfortunately, he got hurt and wasn't able to participate. So, Matt, Jamal Ates, over-under. Let's see here. I was going to go back in time to the last time we had a player that could play in the post. So, Brandon Davies, his senior season, averaged 17, 18, and 8. We're not going to put Ates in that category. But over-under 11.5 points for Jamal Ates.
I'm going to take in the under here.
Okay. I am all, what did I say? 11.5?
11.5 points.
Gosh, I'm going to take the under, but barely. He will be in double digits. I think he will be the third leading scorer on this team.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a mainstay of the offense. I think he's going to be a major contributor. But I don't think you get to 11.5 points a game.
Okay. Over, under 6.8 rebounds a game for Jamal Ates.
Over.
Hmm. I'm going to say over. So, Matt, who leads this team in rebounding? Is it Kyle Collinsworth, Jamal Ates, or somebody else?
I think it's Jamal Ates.
I think it's Collinsworth, but I think it's going to be very close. I think it's going to be very close. I think Ates will lose some of what he could get because Davis is there. You know, there'll be other Nate Austin and others. But yes, I think we're going to have an actually a big rebounding guy. Obviously, Davis, I think, averaged before at Utah State, I think he averaged 9-7 his freshman year. So he's also certainly a candidate to grab a bunch of rebounds as well. I'm excited about both of these guys. All right, Matt, Nick Emery. He is basically the second coming of everybody, apparently. I've heard him say he's the next Jemmer. I've heard people say he's the next Tyler Hawes. I've heard people say, well, he's like his brother Jackson, except what Jackson would have been had Jemmer not been there, right? That Jackson probably would have had more points and been more of an offensive focus had he not been playing alongside the Jemmer. So, Matt, let's start off with an over-under. Over-under 9.5 points a game for Nick Emery. I'm going to go under.
I think you have to go under here.
Yeah, I think by the end of the year, if you chop, you know, the season in thirds, I think the final third, he may be averaging more than 9 points a game. But I think he's going to come along slowly, and he's going to have some games where he kind of disappears, you know. But I am an absolute believer in his talent.
I am an absolute believer in his talent. I just don't think this is the year. I don't think he turns it on in year one. You know, you look at some of these guys that we just talked about that he's been compared to. I mean, not a lot of guys, come in year one, especially after having some time off, and turn it on like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Jemmer was not Jemmer. You know, until later in his BYU career.
Yeah, and you know, Jackson, his brother. Now, coming out of high school, Jackson was not the stud that his brother is. So it may be an unfair comparison, but
his brother is also the product of a system that's received a lot of publicity, and he's evaluated on a completely different scale than Jackson was.
Yes, totally, totally different. But Jackson averaged 2.8 points his freshman year, 7.8 points. He is sophomore year. I think Jackson's sophomore year is a good comparison of what I think his brother will be this year. I think Nick's numbers could be like Jackson. His sophomore year, 7.8 points, 3.8 boards, 3 assists, a steal or two a game. You know, and I mentioned this before. I just hope he can match his brother's defensive energy.
That would be awesome.
We could use a shutdown guy on the perimeter.
Yes.
We have not had one since Jackson graduated. So I would love to have, and that may not happen in season one either, by the way. So that's Nick Emery. Corbin Kafusi, Matt. I love talking about Corbin Kafusi. I loved watching his progression last year. He was absolutely terrible at the beginning of the season and was highly valuable at the end. And you don't typically see that at the college level, right? You see improvement, but you don't see a guy go from basically you're sitting there like he is useless to, wow, he actually could. I mean, I've heard like non-BYU fan talent evaluators talk about his NBA potential, okay? If you had told me at the beginning of the season after Nate Austin got hurt and Corbin started getting worked in that people would be talking about him for the NBA, I just would have been flabbergasted. Anyway, 3.4 points, 3.9 rebounds a game last year, over under, and let's just stick with the rebounds, the points will come or not based on what other people do. Over under 5.5 rebounds a game for Corbin Kafusi.
Over.
I'm going to go under, but slightly. I just think there's too many bigs.
But you know what? When we do the historical comparison of statistics, you know, when you look at what these guys have been doing last year, I think overall there's going to be more rebounds to go around on this team. You know, one of the things we've talked about, you go back over the past couple seasons, is that this team generally they have stretches where they just get out rebounded.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a little bit more production off the glass.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we just may be a better rebounding team, and there's just more rebounds to go around, total, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I look at his game log from last year, Matt, and the statistics back up what I said, where he went from, you know, just kind of a body to an impact player, and that really started, I think, with. Gosh, it was in February. I think it was the Loyola Marymount game when he had the like three blocks, and then the next game he's got four blocks. You know what I mean? Like he suddenly kind of he started to get what was going on, and
yeah, it's kind of like the light bulb came on, right?
Yeah. That being said, he either fouled out or had four fouls in every game down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still certainly some improvement to be had. So Matt, looking at this roster, who would you start? You're coach for a day. Who are your five starters?
Ooh. So Kyle Collinsworth, Chase
what?
Fisher.
What? Controversial.
I feel pretty good about yeah, I feel pretty good about those choices.
You should.
Then I think you've got eights. I think you go eights, Austin Kaufusi.
You go three bigs. We go from having like four perimeter players and one big 1 year to having three bigs. Well, because Austin can play, he can play on a wing. Yep. You know, he's actually more comfortable with his face in the basket than his back to it. I can see that. I think that is very possible at the beginning of the year. I think over time, though, I think one of the guards, Toulson or Chapman, works their way in to so that you have eights and Austin, and then you bring Davis off the bench, like the first guy off the bench. But I like your starting five. It could be very potent. I think
the coaches want to run a smaller lineup. I think smaller guys in these other positions develop a little bit. Maybe I think you get away from that.
Yeah, and I think Nick Emery is the guy that will be. I don't think he will start this year. I think he will be coming off the bench the whole year. But I think he will be one of the first two or three guys off the bench, certainly by midseason. But I mean, the only givens, quite frankly, are Collinsworth and Fisher. After that, I don't know how he's going to mix and match it, because I could see Austin and his kind of, you know, take a charge enthusiasm being a great sixth man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bring him in for one of the other bigs, and he gets everybody fired up, takes a charge, you know, hits a 12-foot jumper. I don't know. There's the thing is, right now, as assuming everyone's healthy, Rose has a just embarrassment of riches. I talked about this with Spencer. We talked about this, you and I, Jerm, Jordan, when he'd been on the podcast. This team, I believe, will be better this year than they were last year.
Yes, I absolutely agree
with
that.
Which is insane when you lost your all-time leading score. So much deeper, though. Way deeper.
You think, look at, you know, and we talked about this a little bit just a second ago, but what was one of the big things last year is production from the big men.
Yes.
You know,
or
and,
complete lack thereof for
right,
a good chunk
that was
of
an
season.
Issue.
Yeah, you just
and said. You don't have. I don't think you're gonna have that problem this year.
No, I don't think you are, because the thing is, say Ates or Davis gets hurt. Okay, one of the I think the best two big guys on the roster. Okay, you know, Austin and Kaufusi aren't terrible, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You're not going to some, you know, freshman pre-mission or really tall, awkward guy right off his mission. You know what I mean? That you're going to go to some good athletes. It's a huge step up. So Matt, who on this roster is going to play less than we think they're going to play? Like as a group, as fans, who at the end of the year we're going to go, oh, I would have thought he got more minutes.
Well, I think everybody other than you is expecting Nick Emery to play more minutes than you are. Does that make sense?
Yes,
I think as a general fan base, as people who follow BYU basketball, I think we're going to see less of Nick Emery than the collective is expecting to see.
Yes, I would agree with that statement. I would agree with that. I would also put actually Kafusi on that list, not because of progression or anything. It's just, you know, at the end of the year, he was, you know, 29 minutes, 27, 18, 22 in the loss to Gonzaga in the conference finale in the NCAA tournament. He played 32 minutes. He's not going to have a lot of those games, right? There will be some people getting foul trouble, right? You know, none of these big guys are going to have to play 35 minutes a game, right? They just won't, unless there are injuries. So I think Kafusi might be a candidate for that. So, Matt, which player do you predict will have a bigger impact than we think as of right now?
I'm going with Jamal Eates, and which you might be able to guess based on the starting five that I put out.
Yes.
I think that a lot of people are expecting Kyle Davis, as you had kind of lined out, and I don't mean any disrespect to anybody, but I think I really like the things I'm hearing about Jamal Eates. I think he's going to be a contributor. I think he's going to turn some heads.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. Davis has obviously, you know, proved it as a freshman at Utah State. It was his sophomore year at Utah State. 9.1 points, 7.6 rebounds, led the team in blocks. And I think Davis is very, very good and will be very good. I am with you. Mm-hmm. I think Jamal Eates at the end of the year is the guy that gets more minutes and puts up bigger numbers than Davis. But the great thing is, I think both of them will be massive contributors, and it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I feel the depth of this team is going to be really big down the stretch. As long as everybody can stay healthy, I think they're going to be very competitive.
Yes, I think so. We are definitely hinting. So, Matt, prediction time. How many wins for BYU basketball in this season?
You want to give? Are we going to go with an over under here?
Yeah, let me think about an over under here. They will play before the tournament, so we'll do pre tournament wins. Okay. We'll start that way. They play 31 games, okay? Over under 25.5 victories for the Cougars in those 31 regular season games.
I'm going to take the over.
I am also going to take the over. Matt, I think they lose 4 games.
I think 4 games.
Maybe 5. I think they lose to Gonzaga probably twice. I think they lose to Utah, unfortunately. That early in the season with this young, so many young guys, I don't feel great about that matchup. I think we drop some weird conference game, St. Mary's, Pepperdine. I don't know. I don't know who, but I think we drop it to somebody along the way. But, Matt, if you look at the preseason analytic ratings, we're 39th, Gonzaga's 8th, Utah's 15th on the Macy ratings, which is a combination of all of the popular ratings. Outside of those three games, two against Gonzaga and one against Utah, as of right now, we would be favored to win in every game besides those three. Now, granted, that does not include whoever we end up playing in Hawaii after Harvard, because we don't know who that will be. But we may be favored in almost every game. I think 27 wins is highly realistic with this schedule.
I think so. I mean, I think the other wild card game in here, and I'm not, you know, throwing rankings out the window here, is that Utah State game in Provo.
Yeah, sure.
That is a losable game. When I say four losses, I think... I would say almost exactly what you said, but at the end, I would say they drop one other game, either one of these conference games or the Utah State game.
Yeah, see, I don't think Utah State's good enough to come into the Marriott Center and take that one. But
jinxed it. You totally just jinxed it.
Hey, like we did with Utah last week when we put them both in the playoff. Wasn't that awesome? And our brother Don was giving us our time. It's called a jinx, Don. It's called a jinx, and it worked. But I just think, you know, just during the middle of the season, one of those conference games on the road against a decent opponent like a Pepperdine, a St. Mary's, heck, San Francisco or San Diego. One of those games, you just come out flat, everything goes wrong for you, everything goes right for them, and you drop one. You know, quite frankly, we haven't been able to have just one of those games the last few years. We've had two or three of them, right?
Yep.
So Matt, regular season tourney, I think we're conference crown, we're both given a Gonzaga, is that right?
Yes.
I believe that. Percent chance, okay, not percent chance. Will BYU win the West Coast Conference tournament?
No.
Yes! They're going to do it!
Oh, come on!
They're going to do it! I predict automatic bid into the NCAA tournament. And with 26-27 wins, I think they get a 6 seed. And if they win the tournament, maybe 5.
Being one That'd of those be a great seed. 5-12 That'd be games. A great seed. That bodes well for advancement.
Yes, that bodes well for exam. What do you think, Matt? Over under on their seed, let's put it at 6.5. Under being good, over being bad.
Over.
Oh, so you think it's less than a 6, more, or you think it's worse than a 6 seed?
I do. I think they get into that 7-8-9 category. Because I don't think they're going to get the automatic bid. I don't believe that they will beat Gonzaga to win the tournament, because that's who they will have to beat.
Yep.
While I do see a 26-27 win season, which I think will be respectable, I don't think it's going to be enough to get them into that space.
Yeah.
But if I'm wrong and they win the conference tournament, absolutely.
Yeah, and my prediction hinges on them winning the conference tournament. If they win the conference tournament, I think that changes from a 9 seed to a 6 or a 5, right? I mean,
yeah.
There is that much of a swing if you beat Gonzaga and win the title. You know, and obviously, I think we're both predicting only 2 teams from the West Coast Conference. I'm only predicting 2. I don't think St. Mary's is not good enough this year. They may get back to that type of level. Matt, real quick, before we depart, toughest game, this was another tweet bag question. Back to football real fast. Brian Taylor asks us, rank the remaining games, football games, in level of difficulty, Matt. Let's start with, if you had to pick the easiest game, I say it's Fresno. You?
Yeah, it's probably Fresno, but San Jose State is not far behind there.
Yes, okay. So let's say Fresno, then San Jose. This is where it gets a little more difficult.
And I feel like we're going to disagree here.
I'm sure we are. But it makes for good radio, Matt. Who do you think is the tougher game remaining, Missouri or Utah State?
I think Missouri in Kansas City is a tougher game.
I agree with you.
What?
What? Why are we agreeing?
I don't know, but I've been predicting this as the possible loss left on the slate.
I know, and I've been predicting
And you've
Utah
been
State.
Leaning the game in Logan, so I totally figured you were going to go that direction.
I don't think Utah State's very good.
Yep.
I think I overestimated. They got 8 turnovers, 7 turnovers against Boise State. That's a freaky thing. And I don't think I factored in that, quite frankly, they just may not be good enough even in Logan to beat us.
Yeah.
The way this defense has started to play and Tanner is getting it, I think that Missouri's defense is good. Their offense is atrocious, okay? But their defense is pretty good. And that is the thing that could, you know, if you just shut down Tanner, gave him another Michigan type of day, then we're beatable, right? Because the BYU defense, while it's getting better, is not, you know, some remarkable defense. So,
and if they're on the field all day, they're going to give up points.
They're going to give up some, you know, and it could be one of those 17-14 type of games, right?
Yep.
But you and I will be there for that game.
Yes.
So that's the game we will attend this year. I was thinking of the Fresno State game, but I decided against it. So tickets will be easy.
I feel like that was the right choice.
Yeah. All right, Matt. Well, that's all we've got for this week. Of course, we'd encourage everyone listening to go to iTunes, give us a rating, you know, give us a review. Tell us how awesome we are. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. BostonBatman.com. Catch us next week. We will have Boston Batman keeps getting cut because we keep running out of time because we blab all the time. But he'll get in here eventually, Matt.
And he's going to be angry when we finally let him on.
Oh, he is really ticked off already. I can hear him in my head. That sounded kind of scary. But anyway, we'll be back next week and also previewing San Jose State, I guess.
I think we kind of just did, but all right.
Yeah. We will win. There we go. There's your preview. Anyway, thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. Have a happy and safe Halloween, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!